Hello, I'm Michael Serapio, and this is the Primetime Politics Podcast.
Tonight on Primetime Politics, remembering Brian Mulroney.
That was the kind of statesman Brian Mulroney was. He would persist when others would just give up.
The former prime minister lies in state in the nation's capital as 5 days of commemoration begins for this country's 18th prime minister. Coming up, we'll hear what dignitaries are saying about the man and his contributions to this country. And
we have forced this government to move in a certain direction.
An NDP resolution to recognize Palestine as a state ends in compromise, but New Democrats say it will still help Palestinians in Gaza and end arms sales to Israel. NDP foreign critic Heather McPherson is standing by. Also, Liberal MP Anthony Housefather will tell us why he voted against the compromise reached between his government and the NDP. This is Primetime Politics. Hello, everyone. I'm Michael Serapio. Official state ceremonies to commemorate Brian Mulroney began in the nation's capital today, with the former prime minister's family accompanying his flag-draped coffin to the Sir John A. Macdonald building across the street from Parliament Hill. This is where Mr. Mulroney will lie in state this evening and where his body will remain until tomorrow afternoon, when the funeral cortege will move to Montreal ahead of Saturday's state funeral at the Notre Dame Basilica. Now, people have been gathering in Ottawa's parliamentary precinct all day to pay their respects. And that is where we find CPAC's Andrew Thompson right now. Andrew.
Michael, the roads surrounding Parliament Hill remain closed to traffic. This is where members of the public have been lining up to pay their respects to Brian Mulroney. Now, also today, a long line of political VIPs coming to give their condolences to the Mulroney family, including the Prime Minister and Cabinet Ministers past and present, party leaders, MPs, senators, ambassadors, and other dignitaries, along with Governor General Mary Simon and some former Governors General. David Johnston worked with the Mulroney government on the environment. He also moderated a leaders' debate when Brian Mulroney was leading the Tories. Here's what he says Brian Mulroney brought to public life.
I think a number of qualities. One, the empathy that he showed in his personal relationships, the trust he established on the international scene, and a person who represented the soft power of Canada and our values abroad. We need those qualities today. We'll miss him dearly. Thank you so much.
Now, Mikhail Jean is another former Governor General talking today about Brian Mulroney's impact on the international scene, especially his work to end South African apartheid. She's also remembering his personal touch, especially during difficult times. Have a listen.
I said to him that he meant a lot to me in difficult times, when he would take the time to call me. He did not wait for you to call him. He would call you. And his words were always the right ones. Never patronizing, but knowing the solitude that it is to be in power, to be, you know, confronted to difficult decisions to make, and confronted to adversity. He had experienced that, and he understood it.
And Michael, that theme of reaching out, that's something, of course, you hear a lot of when it comes to Brian Mulroney. Here's another example from Aaron O'Toole telling us about what happened after he left the Conservative leadership 2 years ago during the convoy protests.
Well, after I gave up the leadership, after a vote of my caucus, when these streets were filled with trucks, it was a very tough time. I put my phone away when I got home. And Brian couldn't reach my phone, so he called my wife's cell phone. You know, he tracked that number down because he knew a friend could use a conversation and a pep talk at a tough time. That's what's remarkable, and it's been great to hear so many other people from different political parties, from media, from academia, a phone call from Brian Mulroney, particularly after a challenging time or a death in the family, just showed a remarkable character that he had. And he'll be missed, but his legacy is our great country.
And the lying in state will continue tomorrow at the Sir John A. Macdonald Building. Another chance for the public to come and pay their respects to the late Brian Mulroney here in Ottawa. Michael.
Andrew, thank you for that. Well, we're now joined by Bonnie Brownlee, who before becoming a royal advisor was an executive assistant to the Mulroneys. Bonnie, thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me.
You knew Mr. Mulroney very well. You were good friends with him for many years, mm-hmm. not only a past employee, but a friend in this present day. What do you think it would have meant for the former Prime Minister to see all these dignitaries and these politicians to come out to pay their respects and to share what the man meant to them?
His smile would be this big if he could see the tributes and the flags at half-mast all across the country. You know, it's been very, really heartwarming, and I know he would love that. And I also know that he would have appreciated Elizabeth May's speech in the House of Commons this week because it was so authentic and emotional. And it's sort of, for Brian, it would have meant a real sincerity about politics, and that he would have cared greatly about.
And I think the family has a sense of that, but I do wonder how they're doing. And you were with the Mulroney family, sadly, ever since Mr. Mulroney passed away.
Yes.
How are Mila and the kids doing right now?
You know, as a family, they're a force of nature. There's so many of them. You know, there's four kids, they're married, there's 16 grandchildren. And they've been a tight unit for a very long time, since those kids were all born. So they, you know, they want to do the best they can for Brian and for their father today. So they're proud. They want to celebrate him with the country. And they'll find their own time to grieve when we get, you know, past the funeral next weekend. But they're strong and they're funny. You know them. You know the Mulroney boys.
I do.
And, you know, so they bring great laughter all the time into the room, and they talk about their father constantly. And Brian Mulroney will be a topic of conversation for this family till they all die. You know, he was larger than life, and they always felt that he was with them. And he still is. He's in that room over lying in state. Like, we feel him, and we're just so thrilled with the way the country has shown him this great respect.
Mm-hmm. You say that you feel him in the room. Mm-hmm. I also wonder how you're doing right now, because again, you were a friend of Brian Mulroney's. You're a friend of the family now and have been for decades. How are you doing right now?
I think I don't really think that he's gone yet, because it's been a bit of a whirlwind since he passed, because we had to get into a state funeral and start to preparations because we were in Florida. So, you know, we took time, paperwork, getting him back to Canada. And I flew back with Mila and their son, Ben. Yeah, I will miss him greatly as a friend and as just a good, kind man who actually cared about me as a person. And we had so many shared experiences together over 40 years. So we could sit down and just talk about everything and anything. And we talked a lot about the early days in politics. His memory was so sharp. And that part of my life for sure is gone, because a lot of Brian's friends and contemporaries, they're gone too, right? So we're entering into a new era of politics.
Mm-hmm. A new era, although, you know, it's important to note, interesting to note, that when Mr. Mulroney passed away, we had premiers, mm-hmm. current politicians, cabinet ministers coming forward and sharing their stories of Brian Mulroney. And that's regardless of your political stripe. Yeah, he
exactly.
spoke to everybody. What does it say to you, or what does that make you think of when you reflect on how he was able to reach to Canadians, regardless of their background, regardless of their political beliefs, and everyone walks away and think, geez, what a nice guy, and aren't I appreciative of that conversation?
I think it was innate in him. He grew up that way. And his father died young. When Brian was young, Brian was about 25 when his father died. So he was the eldest and had to take on his siblings and his mother, educated all of them, housed them, helped them get jobs. He was a very good son and big brother. And he just continued that in life. I mean, even Mila's surprised today at the people that are telling her, you know, Brian called me when my mother died, or Brian helped me get a job, or he said, you know, he did this or he did that. He loved the phone. He loved networking. He was so comfortable in it. And he came to understand in the years after he left as prime minister that people actually did appreciate those calls and that they wanted them. So he wasn't doing it to make himself feel better. He was doing it to make those people feel better. And I just think it's a marvelous capability to network like that to strangers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, what strikes me about it is it seemed almost he reminded politicians that they were more than just a politician.
Yes.
He never lost sight of the fact that we are humans, and politicians in particular need to take care of their humanity.
Oh, he would agree with you 100% on that. Like he felt strongly that, you know, you have to listen to people. That's why opposition leaders or premiers of a province of a different stripe, Brian talked to all of them, gave advice, sought their advice, had friendships with them, had dinners. He felt it was always important to have those relationships for the country to get better and for the country to grow. And he brought, you know, enemies together, if you will, right? And because he was really a good negotiator. He knew how to get people to the table and to talk. I just think, you know, I learned a lot from him about being a better person by I tried to adapt some of his skills that he taught me, you know, because I was 9 years with them, basically every day for 9 years. And it was just an extraordinary experience to watch him navigate and be fully aware of any situation he was in, whether it was political or professional or entertainment. He intertwined all three of those different types of areas.
And as you said, you have been very much involved in the planning of the state remembrances, not only the lying in state, but right up to the state funeral on Saturday. What do you hope these next days will capture for posterity?
I hope that people understand that political life matters and that engaging in the political process is a way to influence and be part of decisions that are made in your own country. And so I'm really happy to see this lovely outpouring because it says thank you to Brian. It is an era of politics and civility and that we're missing. To some extent, I'm not comparing Brian to the Queen, but when the Queen died, something left us as a country. We weren't really sure what it was. And I think for her it was safety, right, and civility as well. But, and to encourage people to get engaged in politics, run for office, you know, men or women, or whatever your gender may be, and participate in what's happening in your country. And I think that's what Brian would be so thrilled today, to see the kindness and the outpouring that's coming from all political stripes, all businesses, all, you know, the roads. It's been a high road, and I'm so thrilled that because he deserves this.
Bonnie, my condolences at the loss of your friend, but thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
A reminder that members of the public can continue to pay their respects to former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney as his body lies in state in Ottawa. Public visitation resumes tomorrow between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. Eastern Time with a book of condolences available to sign at the Sir John A. Macdonald Building on Wellington Street. The former Prime Minister will then be transported to St. Patrick's Basilica in Montreal, and there his body will lie in repose until Saturday morning. Then, on Saturday itself, a funeral cortege will make its way from St. Patrick's to Montreal's Notre-Dame Basilica, where Mr. Mulroney's state funeral will take place. CPAC will have full coverage throughout this week and will broadcast the state funeral on our channel and online at cpac.ca. Now, late last night, members of Parliament passed a motion on Palestinian statehood. It did not recognize Palestine as a state, but the largely symbolic vote does urge this country to actively pursue the establishment of one as part of an eventual two-state solution. The NDP tabled the initial motion with the vast majority of Liberals voting in favor of it once the motion was amended to include the condemnation of Hamas and the return of Israeli hostages, among other goals. Well, for more, we're now joined by NDP MP Heather McPherson, who is also her party's critic for foreign affairs. Heather, thank you for joining us this evening.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Now, this motion began as basically a move to have the Palestinian state recognized by the Parliament of Canada. Instead, what we have here is a motion that's been amended. Does it matter that it does not recognize a Palestinian state directly?
So a couple things. First of all, I wanted to just mention that the motion that we tabled in the House of Commons has 9 pieces on it. The original motion had nine pieces on it. Of those 9 pieces, 88 of those things were achieved yesterday. We did not get the government to agree to recognize the state of Palestine, and it's something that is something we're continuing to work on. I have a motion tabled in the House of Commons. I'll continue to push for that. I don't understand how you can support a two-state solution without recognizing two states, but there is significant things that we were able to achieve yesterday, and you know, significant changes to Canada's approach to dealing with the conflict in the Middle East. So we were quite pleased that we were able to get some of those things through the Parliament of Canada.
Can you talk to us about specifically what you're happy about? Because against this, when you made your argument in the House, against this is this backdrop of the humanitarian crisis that's happening right now in Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I want to say, you know, this is the first time in the history of our Parliament that we have spoken about peace in the Middle East. We've spoken about Palestinian human rights. This is the first time in our Parliament that debate has happened in the House, and that's vital. Like, that's even just that. You know, I saw young people up in the stands, Palestinian Canadians, who were seeing their human rights recognized for the first time. And, you know, I went up and spoke to them afterwards. What a powerful moment. But I also want to say as well, you know, the fact that we are no longer sending arms to Israel, that's vital. Like, that's really important. And there's a multiple reasons why that's important. One of those reasons is that it aligns with Canadian law. You know, we have an arms trade treaty where we are not, by law, allowed to send arms to any country that may be complicit in committing human rights abuses or war crimes. I think we can all say, with what we've seen happening recently in Gaza, that there is a risk that those things are happening right now. So Canada should not be doing that anyway. The fact that these arms can't be sent to Israel right now means that they can't be used against a population of civilians, because what we're seeing right now is collective punishment. You know, what Hamas did on October 7th was abhorrent. It was disgusting and vile, and every one of those terrorists should be held accountable. But the 13,000 children who have been killed, the 30,000 civilians who have lost their lives since October 7th, are not Hamas. They did not deserve to die. And collective punishment is illegal. Canada cannot be complicit in that.
Now, Conservatives, they did not support this compromise motion. And essentially, the argument that we're hearing from Conservatives is that the focus should be on Hamas, more so pressuring the terrorist group to surrender, to return the hostages. Are you focused enough on that front? I know you mentioned it there, but does this motion take away from that at all?
So right now, what I'm mostly worried about is the fact that 13,000 children have been killed. What I'm mostly worried about right now is the fact that in 2024, the world is watching while an entire population is facing starvation. That is the issue that we all should be looking at. You know, the ICJ is looking at the potential genocide of a people, and I don't think at this moment in time Canadians want their policymakers to be thinking about anything but how to bring peace, how to save children's lives, how to do everything we can to protect innocent lives. I mean, that is vitally important. So absolutely Hamas needs to be held accountable. Absolutely, we support the ICC, the International Criminal Court, holding them accountable. That's why we included that in the initial motion. That's why when the Liberals tried to take that out and soften that language, we refused. We need to be able to see Canada apply international law in all contexts equally. So you don't support the ICJ, the International Court of Justice in Ukraine, and then turn around and not support that when that's in Israel. You don't support the international criminal criminal court in certain cases and then not support it when it can be used to make sure that Hamas terrorists are held accountable.
And yet we are already hearing from the Friends of Simon Wiesenthal Center, and they're calling this motion a selling out of Israel and really a selling out of the Jewish community. How do you answer that?
You know, right now what Netanyahu and his far-right government is doing is starving people, refusing to let aid trucks into Gaza. These are children. So we have an obligation under international law to hold them responsible. But I have to say too, you know, you quote from some groups that are upset with this motion. We worked with progressive Jewish organizations. I've spoken to many Canadian Jews who are very happy with our motion. You know, JSpace is an excellent organization that does amazing work and spoke about the need for this motion. You know, for us to have the recognition of Palestine as a state, for example, so that there could be peace. Because, you know, what a peaceful outcome does is it makes life safer for Palestinians, but it also makes life so much safer for Israelis.
Heather McPherson, really appreciate the time this evening. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Well, to continue the conversation, we're now joined by Liberal MP Anthony Housefather. Anthony, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
Listen, the vast majority of your caucus, your government, voted in favor of this compromise resolution. You did not. Why?
Well, because I was against it. I didn't agree with the original motion. I thought it was a horrendous original motion, which was very much anti-Israel. And then I, you know, while the amendments made it better, I still didn't agree with the amended version. And I didn't understand why we would try to amend a horrible motion. You know, when you put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. There was no need to amend it. We should have just voted against it. It was not consistent with liberal values and liberal policy. And so we, you know, they then brought in at the very last minute 14 very substantive amendments to the original motion that no parliamentarian had a chance to even look at for more than 5 minutes before the vote happened. So I didn't agree with any of it.
Okay, and you use the descriptor anti-Israel, although when you go through this compromise, it does include a recognition of Israel's right to defend itself. It also calls on Hamas to surrender. How does that not address at least some of your concerns and lead you to call it anti-Israel?
I said the original motion from the NDP was anti-Israel.
Mm-hmm.
The motion was then amended, but the original motion was anti-Israel. Why are you amending it? Vote against it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now
there was no need. We normally don't start amending NDP opposition day motions. That is not the normal practice. The normal practice is if the Liberal caucus and government don't agree with the wording of the motion as proposed, the answer is you vote against it. You don't spend days negotiating different language with the NDP. And again, there was 2 weeks, a 2 week period where, you know, but between the time that we knew this motion was coming on the Monday and what happened, and then the amendments were shown to people 5 minutes before the vote.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel then about your government colleagues who voted for this compromise resolution?
Well, I mean, how do I feel about it? I think most of my colleagues, you know, are not as invested in the issue as I am, and others would have voted for the original motion. I mean, we have a diversity of views. My issue is not with my colleagues. My colleagues have every right, like I do, to express themselves. My issue is with the government and how the government handled it, not with my liberal colleagues.
So how the government handled it. So are you then considering your own place in that government now then?
Well, what I'm saying is that I'm certainly in a reflective period right now. I feel that I need to think about things after having felt very isolated yesterday. I had very much made it clear that my position was we should vote against this motion, that it would be wrong for me to, you know, to do anything other than that. When I ran in the 2015, 2019 elections, 2021, one of the core issues in my riding is support for Israel. The prime minister was at a synagogue in my riding in 2015 where he stated that there would be no daylight between our position and the Conservative Party position on Israel, except we wouldn't make it into a wedge issue in Canada's Jewish community. And I think we held to that for the first 6 or 7 years that I was in office. But since October the 7th, It's clear that our position is not consistent anymore with the conservative position. They voted against it. Our position is consistent now with the NDP position. That is just horrendous, because the NDP has turned into an anti-Israel party. And yes, the NDP accepted amendments that made the motion better, but it still calls on a weapons, you know, a ban on shipping non-lethal weapons to Israel at a time when Israel is at war. If the whole world did that, then Hamas and Hezbollah that are firing missiles into Israel, armed by Iran from the north and the south, would be free to fire weapons into Israel and Israel couldn't respond. I mean, you can't say Israel has a right to self-defense, but no, you can't ship them anything. And there are a number of things in the resolution which basically equated the democratic state of Israel with the terrorist organization Hamas, at least how the original resolution was drafted. I mean, you can't just make moral equivalencies where there are none. Israel was attacked on October the 7th, and you're either a friend of Israel or you're not a friend of Israel.
Mm-hmm. As you're talking, I do wonder, and I appreciate this as a moment of reflection, would you cross the floor to join the conservatives over this issue?
And I'm in a period of reflection. All options to me are on the table. I mean, I could stay where I am. I could think of crossing the floor. I don't know. I need to reflect. And the first reflection is not about whether I cross the floor or whether I stay. It's do I feel comfortable and at home anymore in my caucus, in my party, given the drift on this issue, which is of fundamental importance to me. I had a similar issue last year with the language bill. Where, you know, I felt that references to Quebec's Charter of the French Language that used the notwithstanding clause preemptively to remove rights was completely unacceptable in a federal bill. And I was on my own in the House of Commons voting against it. You know, and there's times that you have reflective periods. And this is certainly one of them.
Anthony Housefather, I appreciate you speaking with us this evening. Thank you for the time.
Thank you so much, Michael. Have a good day.
Time now for a look at what happened in politics today. New reports from Canada's Auditor General show the federal government is failing Indigenous communities when it comes to housing and policing. In her latest audits to Parliament, Karen Hogan states Indigenous Services Canada and the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation have made little progress in improving housing conditions in First Nations communities over the last 20 years.
After four audit reports, I can honestly say that I am completely discouraged that so little has changed and that so many First Nations individuals and families continue to live in substandard homes.
There is progress, it is being made, but there is so much work to do. The housing challenge for First Nations is not a simple solution, it requires systemic change.
Hogan also says Public Safety Canada is not meeting its policing obligations to First Nations and Inuit peoples by leaving millions of program dollars unspent. That is leading to staffing shortages and underserved communities. Ottawa is contributing $40 million to a Czechia-led initiative to help Ukraine buy large-caliber ammunition rounds. The Defense Minister, Bill Blair, making that announcement after participating virtually in the 20th Ukraine Defense Contact Group meeting.
Our $40 million contribution is going to enable the rapid delivery of several thousand rounds of artillery ammunition to Ukraine, and most importantly, the ammunition that they have told us that they require.
Canada is also donating a package of night vision equipment worth about $7.5 million to help Ukraine's military with its nighttime operations. And finally tonight, Roy McMurtry, a giant of Ontario's political and legal communities, has died at 91. McMurtry was known for using his positions in law and politics to advance social causes, including bilingualism and same-sex marriage. A lawyer turned progressive conservative member of provincial parliament, McMurtry was Ontario's Attorney General for 10 years, then High Commissioner to the UK, before being named to Ontario's Court of Appeal. First as an Associate Chief Justice, and then as Chief Justice. And our condolences to his loved ones. That is Primetime Politics for this Tuesday. I'm Michael Serapio. Thank you for watching. Up next, Esteban Bégin avec l'Essentiel.